We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Oscar Robertson, Lou Alcindor. What a year it has been. The Bucks are the world champions.
Ray Allen driving past Armstrong. The jam over McGrady. 2 seconds. Middleton. Yes! Chris Middleton! Happy birthday, Jason Kidd. This pace is up for grabs.
Knocked away and stolen by Holiday. Phoenix has to foul. And a pinnacle ball throws it down.
Step back three from the top.
Got it! Got it! Giannis ties the game and becomes the Bucks' all-time leading scorer on one stroke.
It's been a 50-year journey. Wisconsin, we've got a room at the top of the world tonight. The Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions.
I'm going to play basketball and win.
And win?
Yeah.
How many games?
Six. We're going to win in six.
Hello and welcome to episode 384 of the Win in Six podcast, proudly a part of the Eurostep podcast network and the Blue Wire podcast family. I'm your host, Adam McGee, and joining me as always, it's my good friend, Jordan Tresky. Jordan, hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Well.
Glad to hear it. This is one of our most enjoyable, most fun pods we've done lately. This is kind of an emergency pod, a reactionary pod, certainly. We were going to record a little bit later in the week. Again, the book schedule is not helping us out. But instead of that, instead of working through some broader thoughts, it seemed worthwhile to do a bit more of a quick hitter that would go up before Wednesday night's game with the Nuggets, be a little kind of devoid of just the ins and outs of Bucks basketball talk on the court, and will instead focus upon the news that broke earlier on Wednesday, which is that Bobby Portis, certainly the sixth man of the year front runner in our hearts and minds, his right knee injury, which he suffered on Monday night, has been diagnosed as an MCL sprain, and he's going to miss some time. I'm going to lean more into the Shams Charania reporting, which was he's going to miss some time, because that is definitely a more accurate representation of how this will likely evolve with the Bucks and even for how we will process it. Woj later followed up in saying that he will miss a minimum of 2 weeks and he'll be reevaluated then. My two cents on this is we haven't seen it reported if it is a grade one or a grade two. You could assume it's a grade one based on Woj saying a minimum of 2 weeks, but a minimum of 2 weeks does not really exclude the possibility that the minimum is actually 4 weeks either, you know. This is what Kevin Durant is currently going through and working his way back from. It's a pretty common injury.
So Chris got,
that's right,
last year too.
That's right. And it is one that, all things considered, this is actually a positive outcome, because when he went down and it's a knee injury, and when a diagnosis comes back like this, you get the region where the damage was done, this is kind of the best outcome you can hope for in that space. It's going to be a painful one for the Bucks, who it seemed like had finally got healthy, finally getting Chris back on the floor, getting everyone out there together. And as really has been the story for a number of years now, once the Bucks get everyone out there together, someone else gets injured. So what's happened with Bobby? We'll get into all the specifics. We'll maybe talk some more about the injury. I've been looking at some of the database stuff on In Street Clothes, the invaluable NBA injury database, to look at how MCL sprains generally seem to kind of work out for players, or what the timelines are. We could discuss that. I guess, first of all, just a real bummer to see Chris back out there. Chris do some good things, clearly feeling his way back, but a really great Bucks performance against the Pistons. An offensive first half for the ages, certainly putting 150 points on them overall. It might just be the Pistons, but we saw a lot of the Bucks that we hadn't seen for quite some time, by way of Giannis being back, by way of Chris being out there, and then this happens.
Yeah. It's not to the level of this, but certainly harkens back to Chris coming back from his torn hamstring during the 2016-17 season. And then that, when he comes back, I believe it was against the Heat. That same game, Jabari Parker tore his ACL for the second time, not second year. Winning a championship has brought all these injury woes and opened Pandora's box in this way. But in terms of Bobby specifically, he's been having such a great year. The fact that we can say that he is a sixth man of the year candidate when the Bucks have had all these injuries, and between him and Brooke, he's been kind of an Iron Men this year, just to have some stability with all the revolving door of absences. So yeah, it's just a bummer because he's, you know, been having a really good year. He plays at a vital position where, yeah, you think of Giannis and Brooke in the backcourt, but obviously Bobby has made his mark in Milwaukee and certainly having, you know, not the best numbers or peak efficiency, but still pretty damn close. There's been so much to like about what Bobby has brought to the table this year, especially. Not having that for the next couple of weeks is kind of a bummer. And it's just, you know, I think the Bucks are, you know, going through all these changes and absences and injuries and all this stuff, the Bucks are well equipped to weather the storm in some ways. And part of it is just part of the grind of a very long NBA season. And it's made longer when you had, what, 4 to 5 seasons now of long playoff runs on top of that. So it's just a lot of miles, and not to keep banging this drum, but this team is a very veteran laden team. So yeah, you're going to be a little bit more susceptible to not like catastrophic injuries, but stuff like this, where it's like he comes down on his knee, it's non-contact, and you fear for the worst, because it's just, you know, that's never, ever good. There's been few instances of something like that happening, and, you know, getting not a best case scenario, but what could be better than a worst case scenario. So in terms of where just Bobby is at and just where the Bucks were trending towards, just to lose another guy for however long this is going to be, because they're going to be cautious because it's not easy to come back during the season either. Just a bummer.
Yeah, and I know the MCL, like, its function is stability. Its function is to enable movement and to feel confident and strong with stability, which is why it can be a troubling injury that can, I guess, have a little bit of murkiness around timetables generally. And I know that's not what Bucks fans want to hear, but it really can be something where it's like 2 weeks go by, 3 weeks go by, 4 weeks go by, and a guy just doesn't feel right on it. It's like implanting and moving, and
are we talking about Bobby or are we talking about Chris?
I do think the fact that was his injury towards the end of last season, then it goes into the off season, that, and then obviously he had a surgery which limited him in other ways. I think that is a big part of what worked against it, because he didn't get to go straight into, okay, I've recovered and let's regain that strength that he would have in an in-season setting. And I guess with some more wear and tear on the clock and everything else that applies to Chris, that kind of compounded itself to what we saw there. But I think even if we were to, I know it's tough, but if we were to completely separate this from Chris, like it is something, and I'm not saying that to be a scaremonger, or to be like, this is going to really go on for a long time, but it is possible that we're like 2 weeks and there's some more that's grade one, and it's like, yeah, we hope you'll be back in 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks come and it's into another week or so on. Now, with the way we're at in the schedule, I believe that 3 weeks probably takes us through All-Star. So I think that is a pretty safe assumption for even in the best case scenario that the Bucks will probably give Bobby 3 weeks and have him hopefully ramping back up just towards the return to NBA action post All-Star break. But we'll see. It's possible that it could be a little bit more than that. Maybe this is the best time for it to happen because you've got All-Star in there and it's going to be at least a few days that you're getting. You're getting a free pass on. You're getting a chance to get him back. It could also be the worst time if the Bucks have their eyes on making deals, because they have lost some leverage in negotiations, particularly if they had their eyes on either big forwards or bigs, because teams are going to really like play up to that. They know there's an urgency that wasn't there. Maybe just to get through the next stretch, even, because as much as we're in a place, and we've been talking about this kind of thing recently, where it's like, yeah, the Bucks are good, and if they get everyone healthy, go and do your thing, and you could beat anyone in the postseason. Part of that was kind of based on, okay, well, when Chris is back, and then you've got everyone back, now Bobby's down, and you're really, really thin in the front court, and you don't have the margin for error. You have a few games margin for error to still kind of stay in the wider mix of the best teams and be taking your chances, but it's a crowded kind of playoff race in the Eastern Conference, and you don't want to kind of put yourself in too challenging a spot where you're really pushing for something you haven't had to in other years. That's all a balance, and I respect, and I honestly don't have an issue that the Bucks, in weighing up that balance, I know now that the Bucks will put the health of the players above all else, and they will back that if we get everyone right and healthy, well, we just believe in ourselves as a team. And whether they were the one seed or whether they're in a play-in, I think with this roster, that's how the Bucks would respond to those kind of situations. But it is an interesting one because of the timing, for multiple reasons, because whether it just plays into existing negotiations and makes those more difficult or raises the price that the Bucks have to pay, or whether it forces them to do a rethink if they had their eye on a certain kind of target, where now they really are in a spot, particularly with Serge having a tantrum. I don't want to put too much stock in that, of the like, oh, you know, if he wasn't like that, if he wasn't feeling like that, he could be playing now. He's doing the Bucks a favor because he's finished. Yeah. He is cooked. If they can get away from him and get someone younger, they don't have to be as good as Serge Ibaka was at his best, but guess what? This is not Serge Ibaka anywhere near his best. So They just need a warm body who is there to give Brook some backup minutes at all. And even beyond Brook now, I mean, part of the concern too is, okay, you got a nice run where Giannis was certainly injured, but I do think they probably said, okay, it's not the worst thing. Let's take our time with this, and you getting a breather isn't a bad thing. I don't think they would have drawn that up with the feeling of, oh, and when you come back, you're probably going to have to play quite a bit of five. And that is the reality that we're looking at with how the roster is. I mean, yeah, in theory, we're going to see more Sandman. In practice, will we? In practice, have they just completely moved on from the idea of that? Kind of has felt like that for a while. And if now is not the time, well, then they actually should just move on, because there will never be a time. I don't know where you're at on that in terms of internally what the roster looks like and how they make up for this. Because one thing is positionally, but the other thing is, again, we're talking about six man of the year leader here. So you have got a massive, massive amount of offensive contributions that you're not going to have an easy way to make up for off your bench. That is a balance that is a real challenge now.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I agree with you in some extent. I mean, the things that you can't replicate with Bobby now not being there is certainly the posting up ability, certainly the hustle he gives on the boards. Obviously, you could counter with, well, he's not the most solid defensively. He's been kind of struggling recently, too. That's all fair, but he was not a perfect player. No one is on this team. Even Giannis, but you can still make a mark with what you're doing and what kind of role. And he's really elevated his game in just so many different ways, not to just go long on Bobby specifically. But I do think there's an intriguing option that I think could really, it would be funky.
I know what it is. Is it one we've kind of been advocating for years? Or not?
No.
I was thinking, like, you're really going to lean into Pat at the four, and that's going to be...
Pat at the four is not that bad.
Particularly with Chris back, because
yeah,
Pat's place and all of that will be shifting soon anyway, and it might just be, oh, well, you're going to see this kind of on your minutes. He's kind of been doing some of that anyway, but continue. There's a way I do have my head that would be more provocative here, but I'm not going to take any more guesses. I'll let you just come out with it.
Joe Ingles.
Oh.
I think, for one, you could go really playmaking heavy. I mean, he's been part of some closing lineups to, you know, in recent games, recent months, I guess. So basically since he returned. And positionally, I mean, obviously the biggest question mark for him is just where do you put him defensively? It's always going to be on low usage kind of forwards who don't really test his athletic ability. It's not a perfect option by any means, because again, Ingles is a tough son of a bitch, but he's not like Bobby in the, he plays a different game than Bobby in the,
yeah,
the hustle,
yeah,
and effort plays.
Well, let's also not pretend that Bobby is like a defensive stalwart. I mean,
no.
So that is an area where that is an intriguing idea, because the biggest concern with Bobby, like, Bobby's size is important, and he has generally done a better job of learning how to make that work defensively and within the Bucks framework. Not perfect. I don't feel like that's been there so much from this season, but I think we all very happily overlook it when his offense has been like to the caliber it has been. That's kind of the best case when he arrived with the Bucks in terms of him as an individual, not the him fitting in, which is really everything we've seen up to that point. But it's like, what's the best version of Bobby Portis optimized as a player look like? It kind of feels like what we've been seeing this year. And even his shooting had been maybe trending a little bit more in the right way from beyond the arc of late, where you're, that might have been our last episode. I think we had the conversation of like, well, what do you, like, if he really starts knocking down those shots again?
Oh, yeah.
Gonna get crazy. Like, what do you do about that? He's at a level that is far beyond any other role player, particularly bench player in the league, if he's doing that. Yeah, that makes the Ingles thing work. But the size is still a thing, though. And there are nights where you're just not gonna get away with that. Like, for example, against the Nuggets, Ingles at the four, if he's always out there when Brook is out there, that can work. I mean, I'm not going to say that there probably won't be moments where Jokic finds himself on Ingles and it's like, good luck. But hey, there's moments where Brook could find himself on Jokic.
Giannis, and
won't be able to. Like, you were talking about a true exception, one of the absolute elite borderline unstoppable players in the NBA.
Yeah.
But if you come up with a team with a strong 3-4 tandem, like strong star level or good size but elite athleticism, that's where Ingles becomes a problem. And honestly, this probably fuels more into than the past ideas of the kind of player that I think a lot of people want the Bucks to trade for a while.
Yeah.
Now, the Ibaka thing is a problem, though, because they do just need a big. They really do need someone who can give you some minutes as a more traditional big. But in an ideal world, I think you do also have a kind of slightly rangy wing forward in the mix, too.
I guess is the Ibaka thing is why the Bucks have elected in years past to have 14 players on the roster, because you never know who wants to get out.
And what a great thing they could have done and just not given him a contract and done exactly that. He's been zero use until now. Like, they could have done that.
In terms of the Eagles,
sorry, just before you start that, I gotta bet they will next year.
Oh yeah, they learned.
John Horst won't make that mistake again.
In terms of the Eagles thing, I just think it kind of makes sense, because it's going to open more opportunities for, I think we're going to see a little bit more of Marjan again. I think we're probably going to see a little bit more of West again, just because Bud is going to want to have defense on there.
Better too.
Yeah, like I think like you just need weeks off. George Hill is probably going to be a little bit. It just, you need size. You need guys that you're going to trust. I did not mention Jordan Ward there because for obvious reasons, but like, I just think it, like, because if you slot Ingles down, I mean, Chris can even be this too, if you're really worried about kind of not putting his feet to the fire, so to speak, where you're not going to put him on guys that may be a little, I don't know, that could shake him loose pretty easily. I think you're going to try to hide him.
That's probably a case he made, that's a better reintroduction for Chris. Just the problem is with where you'd want him in a hurry is back in the starting lineup, and with Giannis there and Brook there, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But what if they don't rush him back into the starting lineup so quickly?
His minutes ramp up
from the bench, and he let's imagine this is the best case scenario where Bobby is out for 2 weeks, and it's probably 3 weeks before we see him. I don't think there's an issue with that. And I think they'd be fine with it. And Chris would be fine with that, him being the sixth man in that setting. And you're just keeping someone who's going to keep your offense taking over in that kind of spot, in that role. And it might be a better and more gradual way to work Chris back. He'll ramp up his minutes from there. We know it doesn't necessarily matter if he's starting or not. We see that with Bobby a lot of the time. that's maybe an interesting and the most logical option of all. It's just, it may be logical, but it does not always necessarily kind of align with what NBA conventions are for players of Chris's status, for former All-Stars, you know, borderline All-NBA, to be like, oh yeah, you're back, and we're gonna have you call off the bench for 3 weeks. Like, Chris is not an ego guy, and at this point, I think he'd be fine with that. I'm just happy to be healthy and working his way back and contributing if the Bucks are playing well. But I do think that makes even more sense than Ingles, just in terms of what you may be concerned even about Chris being exposed to while he gets his feet under him. And as time has gone on, I think he's become a more natural four, just in terms of body type and his strength, what's now almost approaching old man strength. He has got a lot better in that department of his game. He's kind of a better post defender. Have a guy back him down. He's going to hold his ground. He's going to use those long arms to contest shots on fadeaways and that kind of thing. It's something, as he's got older, that has become a bigger part of who he is as a defensive presence. And I think that coupled with, okay, the offense that you looked at for Bobby, like that could work if he's game and the Bucks are game. But they may have a completely different vision, and they probably have a plan mapped out for ramping up Chris's minutes and Chris's role if there's no stumbles along the way, which, you know,
yeah,
knock on wood, we're still not making assumptions on that.
Yeah, I just think the biggest thing, you talked about it directly for a few minutes there, we kind of went off topic, but it's just the fact that this happens 2 weeks before the trade deadline. They have been linked to Jay Crowder for as long as I've been alive. And I wouldn't have necessarily thought Jay Crowder would be the kind of guy that I would go after before this.
Yeah, right now there's more appeal to it than I've ever seen before.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's like, to talk about timing of Bobby, like the other, I guess, NBA reporting being done today is that Matt Ishbia's deal to close his purchase of the Phoenix Suns is advancing, and it's expected to be done before All-Star break. But like, what can really happen in terms of trades, and in terms of if the Suns are taking on money or if they're parting with assets taking, like, I would assume that conversation is a little bit more complex right now. Maybe it is as simple as they're at a point, well, we're just, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's. So consult with the person who's going to be the owner, and if he's happy, it's approved on Sarver's end or whoever is acting on Sarver's behalf.
Yeah.
Or maybe it is not as simple as that, which with Sarver is certainly possible. And it is very much, well, I'm not doing anything, and you'll have to wait for the new guy. That could be a factor in the long-standing, slow-moving trade negotiations, it seems like the Bucks have been involved in for Jay Crowder too. So you've got that, and then you have the Suns, I guess, coming from a position of strength of like, oh, you really want Jay Crowder now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Again, it's such a weird standoff because it, based on where the Suns are and their own inconsistencies and injuries that they have to overcome, they've been incredibly disappointing this year. And I don't know. It just makes it, there's that going on, and there's all like the Knicks stuff too, and just there's just so much posturing made through the media.
Is any of it real? Is any of it real?
I think
do you think the Knicks thing is real?
But the Knicks, the Knicks are kind of irrelevant to this situation. I think the Suns specifically, I do think that they have a checklist of what they want. They're not going to get all of it, but that's just what you do when you leak things to the media to try to get a better offer. And, you know, they have their, as much as now they can kind of, again, put the Bucks' feet to the fire, not to overuse that phrase, but they have their, like, you can easily turn on them where it's like, you guys I don't know where they are in the standings right now,
But they're seventh in the standings.
Seventh in the standings, so they're in the play-in realm.
Tied with the Mavs in record in sixth place. So,
funnily enough, but it's just like you have your own playoff future to worry about, and obviously the Bucks have their own. I don't know. I don't know how much of a wrench this throws into or urgency that the Bucks feel now. Whatever front they put up, if anybody's asked about it, they're gonna not, you know, project a very calm.
They're just gonna say nothing. Tell anyone anything. I actually, this is an injury where that is probably more excusable, but if they knew exactly, were able to pinpoint it today, if they were time travelers who had seen him return and come back, or were able to give us a date, much like we were on Playback Jordan last night, talking about the 2018 Brewers, they wouldn't tell us. A thing. To go into some more detail, as I mentioned, from In Street Clothes, Jeff Stotts, is that? I'm not blanking. It's Jeff Stotts, right? Yep. Is In Street Clothes. An athletic trainer who, honestly, a really invaluable resource, maybe not updated quite as regularly as it once was, but even just looking through, you can, at this point, Google In Street Clothes and any injury, and you'll get a reference guide for different NBA players and what it's been in terms of length of recovery over the years. Just a really valuable website. If this is grade one, that 2 weeks timeline is probably pretty solid. And there have been multiple examples of that. I think one notable was it like the 2016 finals, maybe conference finals, where Steph had a grade one MCL sprain and he returned pretty quickly, I think in about 2 weeks as well. One of those Warriors playoff runs. I can't remember exactly which round it was, but it was towards the business end.
It was the 73-9 year.
Yes, that's right. Which is 2016.
Yep.
The flip side of this is if it isn't a grade two sprain,
which
Chris's was, and which the average time for NBA players from the In Street Clothes database, and this is an article from a few years ago, who's funny enough, and Kevin Durant did this that time too, but it was an average of 21 games missed, or roughly 6 weeks, which is not insignificant.
No.
Given the situation the Bucks are in, the time of year, and again, the kind of the idea that we're all hoping for, which this is the beginning of a ramping up process for the Bucks of getting themselves really kind of finely tuned for the challenges ahead. There isn't a reason to believe it's going to be that at this point. But part of how we can stretch that is, as I mentioned before, this is an injury that is a stability concern for guys in their knees. So a lot of it is about feel, as opposed to just, oh, you did your 2 weeks, you're back on the court. It's one where players, I think they can often, I've heard guys talk about over the years too, where it's like they get out there and it's just doesn't feel right. Just doesn't feel right. And on most injuries, guys are like, yeah, you say I'm good to go, I'm good to go. But this kind of thing is one that I think spooks players a little bit more, because if you don't get this right and you go back, well, you could be facing a lot more than 5, 6, 7 weeks, anything like that. You could lose a season, you could lose a year. Yeah. The Bucks will not play with fire on that. So we'll see. I hope it's a grade one.
Either way, but you're getting a week worth of time.
Is it a week this year? That's half a week. Because they're getting worse with this. It's approaching Major League Baseball. Jordan, in my first MLB season last year, when I was so excited, I was like, the All-Star break is here. Got a few days off, or I won't be up late watching games. And then it was 3 days or something like that. And I was like, sorry, what? Excuse me? How's this work? And I feel like the NBA, maybe it'll be unfair, because I guess the schedule's been condensed in recent years. So have we got a bit more time this year?
Let me see. It's still very, why can't I find a link?
It's 8 days. It's 8 days.
8 days.
Between games for the Bucks. So
that's not insignificant, not bad as well.
Not bad.
If I remember correctly, Pat, when he something with his hand last year, metacarpal?
Yes.
Metacarpal? Metacarpal. Also overlapped with the All-Star break as well. Which again, you just buy some time. It's all about buying time at this point for the Bucks. God knows that they could use some to get everybody healthy again.
Yeah, Pa fractured his fourth metacarpal in his ring finger on the 10th of February last year. And was looking really good before that too, in a kind of way, like yes, Bobby, was. I think. Do you think they go a crowd or our Crowder-esque routes out? Or is it, do they actually have to go and try to, I mean, we know what their salaries are, that one trade that they're going to make, certainly the trade they're going to try to make first in every case, is going to involve Jordan Wara with Serge Ibaka, you know, maybe a George Hill. You're going to just kind of get off some of what, you know, all due respect for one of the three parties that I mentioned there, your junk. You're going to just try and get rid of your junk, package it together for salary, throw a couple of second rounders with it, and be like, great, we got rid of that and we've got something we can use. And in that scenario, of course, you're also freeing up a roster spot, whether that is for someone who's a free agent, someone who emerges on the buyout market. One way or another, do you think we are seeing multiple player turnover sparked by this or just otherwise for the Bucks? Because as much as I'm not convinced that the trade they're going to make, I've held this way for a long time, and I'm still, if Bobby hadn't got injured, I'd probably like, yeah, we'll just don't do anything. Unless, if you can get off Serge, like, obviously that's one, get rid of him. He wants to go, you don't want him. He's not doing anything to help you. Get rid of him. If you package war, you free up some spots, whatever, and then you want to take a couple of buyout flyers, that's easier said than done, as we talk about every single year.
Yep.
But fine, do that. I'm not convinced they're going to get a trade that's going to make them better. And in all honesty, that is the case for the majority of teams in this kind of situation every single year. You make a trade and it's not the trade that propels you to great things, a la PJ Tucker. It may be more like Nikola Mirotic. And honestly, it may even be worse in a lot of cases.
It might be just periphery. It could be what Serge Ibaka was last year.
That's also true.
Yeah, I mean,
can we just on that? The Bucks had 2 second round picks back on that, because I keep... people keep talking about Dante for Serge Ibaka, which, you know what? I'm fine. Get rid of Bowden. There's someone else who agrees with me, Jordan. There's someone else who agrees with me. But just get rid of Bowden. That's fine by me, particularly when you got 2 second rounders back. I mean, for anyone who's romanticizing Dante, I don't think they're really paying too much attention. Some good stuff. There's still plenty of the things that made him Dante and that force the Bucks to lose hope and move on, and definitely a lot of fans. Sorry,
it was always about the picks.
Yes,
it was always about the picks.
It was about the picks because this year you're probably going to use those picks. Like that's what Horse has been doing. If an opportunity comes up ever where you could be like, oh, you're going to give me more second rounders, so I can just have some route to making future deals. That's what it's for. So are you on? Are we looking at multiple players turning over, or how do you actually predict this playing out? I'm not looking for names. I wouldn't be so unkind.
No.
Not that kind of podcast. But just in terms of what is the direction this is going to unfold in?
I'm just thinking of the same names. I'm not gonna, like, I understand it's Crowder or bust for a lot of people, but like, it's just been so, there's nothing has significantly changed with that situation, and probably since the moment that he asked for a trade, and the Bucks made their offer, and nothing has much changed for either one team. but I do think it's more periphery. I don't think it's this PJ Tucker. I sense either more like last year, or it's like the 2020 year where you get a guy like Marvin Williams, who wasn't a trade. It was a buyout from a Hornets team that was pretty abysmal. There's not a lot of sellers right now. It's, again, I think anybody that is deemed a seller, it's either very obvious or it's the teams that you want them to make a move, whether it's like a Raptors or a Jazz. I do think it's just a matter of...
Will we list the sellers, like the obvious sellers? I mean, this is the thing. The NBA wanted to incentivize winning. And so the play-in came to existence. And the play-in has killed the buyout market. It may take multiple years before people realize it just doesn't exist really anymore. But that is the spot we're in. Because right now, if you look at the Eastern Conference standings, the Raptors, who are in 12th, are 1.5 games out of the play-in. And they've got young players, and they may just decide, let's just keep what we're doing. We could actually make the play-in. We could get in and have a run. And if not, we're still young. We come back next year. We make some changes.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. And if I was a Raptors fan, I absolutely am not. Don't ever say that about me. I would probably be like, cool, let's do that. There's no need to sell stuff off at this point. I don't know if it's kind of maximum value or the thing that's going to lead to the best results. So that leaves you the Magic, the Hornets, the Pistons. They're your sellers. They're the teams who are 4+ games back of the playing spot. Fantastic. Like, how much is really there? Look, there are a couple of, I'm sure people will chirp up again. Our friend Numak loves to do this about Mo Bamba. And if Mo Bamba was going for free, the Bucks need a big, and I'd be like, cool. It's not going to work out like that, I'm sure. And if you go to the West, it's even tighter. The Lakers, Darvin Ham's Lakers. I'm sure that's how everyone refers to them now.
The Rui Hachimura-led Lakers.
They are 13th in the West, but they're only a game and a half out of the play-in.
As the Rockets and Spurs.
It's the Rockets and Spurs. And the Rockets and Spurs have nothing. The only thing collectively between those things they may have is Eric Gordon, which is why Eric Gordon was linked to the Bucks in the past week. And I don't know if there was any truth to that. I'll be honest, I didn't really want any part in that at this point. I feel like the trade for Eric Gordon ship has sailed because he has rotted on bad Rockets teams for multiple years now. Every year, they just do not trade him. But if that was a real thing for the Bucks, well, they now need a much bigger player than Eric Gordon. They're certainly trending up to forwards.
Can I interest you in one Kenyon Martin Jr.?
Not particularly. He's fine. Like, he's fine. But if you just got him, if he was just there, sure, I'd be like, that's cool. That could work well. But the Bucks, Jordan, I know if you know this, they should be, and I believe they are, trying to win an NBA championship. And I do not think that is the move that swings their fortunes one way or another.
No. And on top of this, I think Jake Fisher, I'm going to actually bring this tweet up. He mentioned how the Hachimura deal was made, and the Bucks actually played a wrinkle in it because there was a 3-team concept between the Suns, Bucks, and Wizards that would have sent Rui Hachimura to the Suns, Jay Crowder to the Bucks, and 3 seconds plus salary to Washington. And that set the price for the Lakers' acquisition of Rui Hachimura because they put up another second round pick for, so 4 total to go to Washington. So Rui Hachimura going to get paid this year. Solid player. I don't think he's, you know, an all-star level player, the kind of player that the Wizards thought he would be, maybe, but they're also terrible at drafting and developing. So I don't know which way this could go, but to set the bar so high for a player who, fine, but also is a restricted free agent this summer, that's a bar that's really high that I'm sure the Suns would be like, look at this. Let's try to get that. And it's like, no, why?
The Lakers are ruining it for everyone, as always.
Yeah, of course, because they can't manage well.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. The horse will do something. That's his MO. And I think this year, more than some other years, it's important that he gets whatever that something is right. So we'll see. Hopefully, I mean, the flip side to this is if just Chris can stay healthy and work his way back and start to look something like Chris, that softens the blow of losing Bobby, because the level of importance, and it's not to say he's not important, but that we're ascribing to Bobby Portis is very much tied to what we've watched all season, and that has almost exclusively been without Chris. And you're certainly in a better position to manage this injury with Chris back, if Chris is back. It's the way. I will put that one. So I guess that's part of the upside. And again, let's just hope it's 2 weeks. But even if it is that, I do think it's the kind of reminder that maybe horse needed, maybe the books needed, for all the different things. I'd be like, oh, they could do with this, they could do with that. Injury to Brooke or Bobby is pretty catastrophic with the construction of the roster. And we already know about the impact of Brooke, and I don't think any of us would doubt the impact of losing Bobby, but just without having depth, it's something that's been their situation for really a number of years, and they've got away with it because Brooke has been an Iron Man figure, except for his injury last year. It maybe in part, Jordan, that contributed to that injury being quite as much of a problem. I don't know, was he playing for years? But yeah, my back is pretty sore here, but I'm going to go and play 81 games. And the only reason I won't play 82 is because you're going to sit me out of one at the end of the season. But they are the guys, like, just in terms of the shape of your roster, that the books can't afford injuries to. They don't have the flexibility or the options. And where the depth is really good on the wings, what people have kind of had their eye on is, oh, what they're missing is the wing forward. And if you lose one of those bigs, that actually becomes an even greater need again. So you end up kind of almost doubly punished because you don't have the center depth that you want, and also because you don't have the depth in what could be your plan B. That's got to force horse hand. But your hand could be forced, horsed. And just go full Dr. Seuss here, Jordan. Your hand could be force-sourced. I can't think of other ways to continue this rhyming. But there may not be the players.
Horse is a horse, of course, of course.
yeah. All right. Speaking of Dr. Seuss, it's time for Mike Dunlap's Tweets of the Week, presented by Jordan Tresky.
We're just going back to Twitter.
I was about to say, first things first, are they in fact tweets this week, Jordan?
They're tweets. Dunlap had a lot of thoughts running through his mind. Talk about coaching, of course. Lots of thoughts on officials, and got a lot of blowback from various officials as well. He also, he's not just a one sport man. We've come to know this over the years, or I guess, yeah, literally, because this segment debuted in 2022.
I was like, over the years?
Okay. He had some thoughts about Tom Brady.
I'm pushing back on this. Is this your pick?
No. This is a different Tom Brady one.
All right.
Tom Brady. Oh, sorry. Tweeted at 2:21 p.m. January 17th, 2023. Tom Brady. Time's answer. Fate, sad, depends. His decision, not mine, not yours. Poem, semicolon. Man in the mirror, semicolon.
No. Poem, colon. Man in the mirror, yes. Colon. He's going double colon here, which is a bold move.
Double colon.
Pretty sure it's not. Well, continue. I think it's grammatically frowned upon.
For it isn't your mother, your father, or wife whose judgment upon you must pass, but the man whose verdict counts most in your life is the one staring back from the glass. Oh,
is the glass? I wonder whose poem this is. I'm going to Google Man in the Mirror and hope I don't just get confronted with the Michael Jackson song, which I don't believe these are lyrics from, although I would love if the lamp is just like poem and he's given lyrics to Michael Jackson, Man in the Mirror. Man in the Mirror poem. Dale Wimbro. Dale Wimbro is the poet in question here, it seems. Don't know if he's a poet of renown or if this is like an inspirational quotes type poem by what I'm seeing when I Google it.
He was a poet. He lived from June 6, 1895 to January 26, 1954.
Okay.
American composer, radio artist, and writer. He's best known for the poem The Guy in the Glass, written in 1934.
So what I was going to ask, and I haven't read the whole poem, is the guy in the glass, is this a reflection in the mirror? Or, Jordan, is this a reflection in the bottom of the glass, you know? Bottom of a pint glass, bottom of a
glass onion.
No,
David Blaine. No.
What? No. It's a good tweet. I'll let me circle back. This one is good.
Of course, there's so many other ones to choose from.
I mean, there really is. Even on the same day, power of vulnerability, colon. Gateway to trust, quote, I am lost, can you help me, end quote, quote, tell me how I can help, end quote, think we, not me, quote, where do we go from here, end quote, beginning of timeout, colon, ask a question, quote, what is the best thing we are doing, end quote, leading by following, parenthetical, at times, very powerful. Just that the man is a menace with all of this punctuation.
I don't think I've ever seen this much punctuation in my life.
Losing a game, job, or failing in general. Like we've got 1, 2, 3 commas in that sentence. Not incorrect, but just a very heavily punctuated way of speaking. Mm-hmm. Ask and leave room for discussion, a review. Where did we fail? What did each of us do? Why did we do it that way? What should we do differently? Whatever the outcome of that process, most important to have a preview, review, and takeaway. Lovely, lovely words. What a wise man, Jordan. Just do not cross him. Do not kick back on any of these, because Mike Dunlap will put you in a body bag. If you're like, Mike Dunlap, I disagree with your thoughts on officials, he's not here for it. This is not a platform for conversation, Jordan. This is, he's standing up on a podium and he is sharing his thoughts and we are lucky to be receiving them.
He's been on this earth for 65 damn years. You're going to listen to him and you're going to like him.
Just to wrap up, I'll give the example. So in what are some of the most controversial Mike Dunlap tweets so far, I know some of you are like, oh no, is Mike Dunlap going to get cancelled? No, it's nothing like that. Officials. Tough job. You bet. Paramedic. Nurse. Grade school teacher. Tough job. Absolutely. Many jobs demanding. At some point, the individual has to stop burping that out as a way out. Most enjoy the challenge, and instead of quote unquote excusing, revel in the scarp of it all. To which someone replied at referee CPA, so possibly a referee here, Jordan, says context missing. This is back to really, I mean, this ties into a larger officials has been a trend recently. I'm trying to think what might have sparked that. It could be anything. The man is clearly not. His life goes far beyond the books. Judgment is always there. Your wife, it's always there. These are recurring themes at this point. The owls hooting their judgments. I can't remember what the one was where... Was your wife also judging you in that other one?
I think there was... Yeah, there's something... Yeah, your wife.
or to ignore your wife's judgment, essentially, which was surprising. But so this person replied with context missing. Hollering to get attention when it's loud and I'm across the floor is one thing. Hollering when I'm right next to you or when it's about an old play, that's another. To which Coach Dunlap quote tweets, context missing? Not really. Say we go with your context, and it is very loud in stadium/gym. More context for you. My experience, many officials use that as defense mechanism, not to mention power ploy. Even more context for you to consider.
Boom. Game, thick, set,
thick
truth.
Burn, Jordan. It's always a pleasure. Always a great time to go and check out what Mike Dunlap's been up to on the Twitters. You know what Elon Musk, every now and then when he's like, oh, record engagement, you know, people have never been as active on this site. Is he really just talking about Mike Dunlap and the Mike Dunlap effect?
Who's to say?
Well, I was hoping you. You would take a stance. I know you're not a man for taking stances, but I thought in this one you might.
I will stand and have a stance, and it'll say the Dunlap effect.
The defensive stance?
Yes. Just like G. Allen.
Yeah, I think Mike would approve of a defensive stance. If you're going to take a stance, take a defensive stance. All right, Jordan, that does it for us. Quick hitter. That was actually also since we last recorded, so it was probably what should have been discussed. But listen, there'll always be more. There's always room for more.
He's a volume shooter, and he's a volume scorer.
It's the gift that keeps on giving, you know? Mm-hmm. The overflowing well, Jordan. We just never have to worry about it running out. Until next time, thanks to all of you for listening. Make sure you subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You should also go check us out and get involved. Join the conversation on Repod. Repod is a podcasting platform for if you want to go and listen, you want all your pods into one place. But also if you want to be able to chime in episode to episode, share your thoughts. We here at Win in Six on the Eurostep Podcast Network main feed and in the wider GSPN community, we are on Repod at the moment. We're having a lot of fun with it. If you've got thoughts on a given episode, something you like, something you didn't like, hit us up. Start the conversation. Or you don't even need to start. Jordan will have started it. You know, let the conversation flow, Jordan. That's what we specialize in. Join repod.com/GSPN. That's how you can get to the GSPN room and share all your thoughts. I think that's pretty much it. Cruising for bruising for all things Brewers. Talking to Tundra for all things Packers. Make time for this for all things pop culture. GSPN.info if you want more on any of that. Until next time, thanks again to all of you for listening. Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you.